Senior Focus. Welcome, everybody. I'm Anne-Marie Currie. I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. And I have with me in the studio a very important guest today, Trish Deans, who is the Vice President of North Shore Grey Power and wears a number of hats. She's the co-founder of Devonport Trust. She's on the Civic Trust, so has a huge background and heritage. And she's also a former member of the Devonport Takapuna Local Board in the previous term of council. And she was formerly the assistant principal of a secondary school in Auckland for girls, a very large secondary school. So she had a huge management role in student welfare and care and learning and literacy issues as well. So welcome, Trish.
Thank you, Anne-Marie, and hello to everyone out there who's listening to Senior Focus.
And Trish, I've invited you today because of the work that you're doing in the community at the moment and your strong interest in emergency management. This is a topic that we keep on coming back to. And I know that a number of groups have been formed, and not many people, unless they're on them, know a great deal about what they've been doing to form a plan and what is involved with that plan. So that will be what our main focus is. But there's also been quite a number of topics that you've written on in the Grey Power newsletters over the last 6 months. So I was keen to hear from you about the state of the housing scheme where the council set this up some time back, where people could buy their own units. And not many people know about this or what is happening to it. So I thought both those topics really are worth exploring. So thank you for coming along.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. I'll really give you an indication of, it's called the Own Your Own Housing Scheme. And this was set up in the 1970s by the Auckland Council. And it was a really terrific idea. It still exists. Where people who wanted to downsize, to go into a unit, and wanted to live in a village situation where others who were seniors and wanted to downsize could actually buy into a property. They paid, the residents paid 80% of the property, and the council remained with a 20% shareholding. So it's really, and particularly now, it's a very good choice if you're not someone who can afford those retirement schemes. However, in 2022, the council decided to pull out of the scheme and they've been looking for a buyer. But that raised a lot of problems for those residents. Now, those problems really are, they've been left in the lurch wondering who is going to buy into their schemes. There is no buyer. The council's just this year let the residents know. But they've always kept the residents in the dark, and that's been very disturbing. It's caused a lot of anxiety. These are mainly older people, and if you think of yourself in the 80s and you don't know who's next going to be an owner in your property scheme, then it's very, very frightening. And I feel the council hasn't done a good job in keeping up residents informed and really reassuring them.
Yes, and given that the Better Later Life strategy nationwide supposed to be informing councils on how to be more enlightened in their policies towards seniors, and also the council itself signed up to the Age Friendly City, and of the three areas that it's focused on, because it could choose what areas it focused on, it chose housing, transport and communications. And we know that they're doing well with communications, that they've upgraded what the libraries are doing for digital issues for seniors. We know that there's been extra effort put in to that. We also know that there's been some work done around accessibility to transport, although it leaves a lot to be desired looking at the long-term plan. But when it comes to housing, I'm very much in the dark myself as to what progress council has been able to make on the ground for seniors in the in any housing area.
I mean, we're really lucky still to have that our gold card, and that's fabulous. I mean, we also have the winter payment from the government, and we also have our pensions attached to the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. But housing is really an issue. Now, we may look at people who have their houses and have ownership of their houses, but they are now facing rate increases. And really, there should be a kind of a rate freeze for those older residents. They've paid their dues all along with their rates. However, the really pressing issue is this one particular scheme where the individuals are just left sitting and haven't, and in effect have actually gone to through a process where I've questioned council through the through a legal process, and it appears that these residents were not informed, not well informed, that their questions really weren't answered, and that council has avoided being a good communicator.
That's quite serious accusation to level at council, and I know you wouldn't do that lightly without thorough evidence. So I think this is a very important conversation. Mm. I have also heard, and I'm not quite sure how accurate this is, so I'd be keen to surface this. I've heard that there are some of these units that are in fact empty.
That is one of the worries for those who have bought into. There are 14 complexes, 14 villages across Auckland, and they are in different areas. There are three on the North Shore. So the ones that are left empty haven't, council hasn't gone ahead and leased those properties or found owners for those properties. So they're left empty. And council hasn't kept up their part of the bargain, which is to maintain the buildings and paint them, wash them down, look after them so that they could be sold again. So the maintenance aspect has been left. Therefore, the residents in the other units within a village see their own price or their expected price for their property falling. So those issues aren't addressed and they're just left sitting. Radio New Zealand has picked up the issue, and I'd hope to push it further with aged care and some of the commissioners.
Yes, the Aged Care Association has a new CEO, and she's Tracy Martin, the former Minister for Seniors. Very well informed, very knowledgeable about all sorts of senior issues, but especially housing, because they are affected right throughout New Zealand by the housing crisis, with 30% renting. And there are people, possibly, who could save up a deposit and actually move into a unit like this if the scheme was widely publicised and, as you say, those buildings that are empty, if they were better maintained and brought up to scratch. It could be a good option for people who are shut out of retirement village options and who are struggling to pay $450 a week rent.
Exactly. Now, they may be a property owner who, these properties are valued at about $600,000. So it's well under that million mark, which Auckland has just reached. If you take the $600,000, you take 20% ownership with council, it does make it affordable for those who are really on the edge there in Auckland. They're secure, they're safe, they're good communities, they look after each other. And they value the fact that there's someone who's purchased the property beside them. So that's what they were promised in the beginning. And even if they bought in later in the 1970s, that was the deal. That was the contract. Mm. So I am very concerned that we live up to, and we have responsibility to look after those in those villages.
Yes, well, I would agree. The key thing that is the most worrying thing is how little trust people have in council when they offer things or when they talk about things. In the last program, I talked about the things that were promised to us back in 2015 when the network manager of Auckland Transport spoke to us, and in front of his bosses, the four main board members. And they were promising canopies, covered ways to connect from one bus stop to another, because they knew they were selling to the public a downsizing of service. Instead of travelling on one bus, you now had to get two buses to go to the same location. And part of the way of selling it was to say, oh, we're going to have covered ways and canopies and all this. We've never ever seen a single one. You know, there was no money anywhere put aside for any investment and improvement in infrastructure.
Mm. You're often given a picture, an actual drawing of such a canopy, or a streetscape which looks fabulous, but when it comes to push and shove, those things disappear very quickly.
So this is just another example, basically, I feel, of the talk not being anything that you can really trust or rely on. And this is the most unfortunate thing, because every time trust is eroded, it makes it harder and harder for us to, those who are advocating for things, to actually get seniors to come in and come behind a campaign for change, because they're so disillusioned.
And council actually looks at that they look at the trust response from the public, and they know the trust response is very low and has been for some time. So it's not new to them, but they're not helping by being very straightforward and very honest. People just want to hear the thing that they're going to say, not all the fancy bits. They just want to know exactly what can be provided. But I do have a lovely story. When my husband a few years ago was very, very unwell, and where I live, he would catch the bus to work and then come home on the bus, but he would often fall asleep because of his illness. And the bus drivers knew where he lived, and they used to wake him up and make sure he got off the bus. So, you know, we can still be thankful for some mercies in the public transport system.
I do think some drivers are excellent. I know that there are drivers who actually stop at my street corner rather than stop at the bus stop.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it saves me a few more metres. They know I have to walk at least 800 metres to get home. So if they can chop a few of those metres off, they're quite
help.
Happy to do it. because I'm maybe the last passenger on the bus. Not that it's midnight, it's only 8:30.
No, but every metre counts, doesn't it, in
it
the wet
does.
Weather.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm interested to know what's happening with emergency management, in that I've heard little bits and pieces about different groups that are formed across the city, and so most localities have been mapped and a decision made as to what area will be covered and handled by a particular emergency management group. And I know that you're involved with the Devonport Peninsula group.
Yep.
But again, I'm not clear how far north it moves, whether it goes up as far as Sunninook or follows the local board boundaries or quite what. So that's my first question, is what area are you covering? But the main question I'm really wanting you to focus on is how is the group formed, in terms of they represent what ages and types of people, and what have they come up with for a plan?
Okay, well, I'm going to start with last November I spoke to the council, a subcommittee of the council on emergency management. Council had put out a plan, but what they were missing was the fact that they needed community groups. So they acknowledged the importance of iwi in emergency management, but they hadn't, and they acknowledged the need for, of course, an Auckland emergency management group, but they hadn't thought through the local groups. So I made them aware of that. Then the next, I'd been working with our group in the, as you say, the peninsula across Devonport, Belmont, Bayswater, and specifically I worked with that area so that we could come up with a plan that could be used in other parts of the city. So whatever we did would have value elsewhere. So we located the main threats in terms of risks of flooding, fire, tsunami, pandemics. We covered them all and did a scheme where what do you do before, what do you do during, what do you do after? So it's preparation as well as a sense of how you cope, and then afterwards how you might work through the issues with your community. So that was one element of it. And then the other element was that we identified six buildings and got permission through Auckland Emergency Management for them to become our hubs. So they're spread across our community. And if another event happens, like the flooding, or, and we really do expect flooding and severe weather more than anything, that's kind of what council's pointing out to us. We have hubs where people can go to for information. We don't have hubs which necessarily provide accommodation, but at least we can keep a system going for about 3 to 5 days. So our plan, our guide, our readiness plan, covers that kind of approach so a community can manage. And we would hope that that can be replicated throughout the city. And we're just about to publish that with Auckland Emergency Management in the beginning of June. So we're ready to go.
Well, that's good news. One of the discussion points that has arisen in the post-examination of the flooding and the aftermath was the shortage of generators, of actual equipment that people needed. And I know Daniel Grant from the local board in Kaipātiki area was most emphatic that more effort had to go into that side of things, of providing emergency management infrastructure in hubs. And also there was a need to make sure that people got information fast, so they weren't in the dark. Not just about an emergency being declared, although we know it was very delayed, and that was a problem, but also more what's are we likely to see coming next? How do we stay prepared and stay informed? And so I'd like you to, I mean, that's quite a lot to address, but I'd like you to sort of concentrate on how much of the criticism of what happened a year plus ago, how much of that has been considered?
The criticisms of a year ago, I mean, there are 35, maybe 40 people in that Auckland Emergency Management team. They do work with NIWA, the wider groups. I don't criticise them, because they're underfunded and under-resourced, and they're wonderful people and they do their very best. When I was on the local board, I made sure that they gave me the opportunity to listen to some of the emergencies that they managed. They were much smaller scale, and they managed very well with housing, roofing, those sorts of things, and placement of people. If there should be another disaster like the February 22, we in our local area, we know that they'd set up in Albany a much larger capacity to cope with people and their needs, as well as from that centre start issuing instructions. I am lucky that I work with the Air Cadets and their squadron leader and our local scouts groups, and they have the kind of thinking and also the experience that we need in those emergencies. So I'm relying on them in our community to be very active with us. In terms of equipment, we can't even get funding from Auckland Council for the work we're doing at the moment, so it's all voluntary. And if I'm going to publish a booklet, I'm going to have to go to our community to seek funding. In terms of equipment, we don't really want to house a lot of equipment. We don't have room for it in terms of generators. But I will go out to our local area and see who does actually have generators, because you'll be surprised what individuals need. So we'll look at that within our community and what we can resource, because Auckland Emergency Management and the council don't have the money. I think there's something that we need to also take account of is that Auckland Council is really going under a infrastructure report. Now, it's wonderful what they're doing. It's catchment by catchment, and they're going to come up with a very strong understanding of each area. So we're waiting for that report, and we'll work more on that report and what we might need once it's published, but it's still some time away. So for me, it's about our community having a sense of readiness. We do have a close relationship with AEM, Auckland Emergency Management, so we know we can work, communicate with them in the stressful times. But it is very loose at the moment. Yeah. I also work, with the... I'm just going to look it up, so if you hear some paper rattling, don't be surprised. We have an Auckland North West Community Emergency Network, and that's from Murarrie up to Warkworth down to Devonport. So I work with, work's the wrong word, I volunteer with those groups so that we can support each other in an emergency, so that we can all, if there's a need somewhere, we can assist somehow.
Well, thank you, Trish. Thank you for your volunteering and bringing your expertise of networking, of managing youth, of understanding people and their communication needs, because it takes somebody with all of these skills and nonetheless empathy to be able to coordinate and collaborate and bring out the best in people. Because that's what we need.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in any of this, so I do rely on the experts doing the planning, but building a community, I hate the word resilience, but building a community civil defence group, you know, I think we all see the need for that.
Well, I congratulate you on what you've done so far. One thing that stood out over the two large incidents that we had in 2023 of huge weather disruption, the actual emergency management system of communications, the lack of a phone system that would work for people on the ground was a real serious criticism that was brought up time and time again by different people in different ways. One of the things was very obvious that the people answering the phone at Auckland Council had no idea of the areas they were that were affected, and people ringing in from those areas were very frustrated because they weren't understood by the person that they got in touch with. Now, one of the key moves that needed to happen was a setting up of more local phones so that there would be a number for, say, Albany that would deal with the North Shore area as a whole. So only people answering that phone would be familiar with the North Shore areas, familiar with the flooding zones, familiar with the places that were likely to be bad routes. People needed to know how to travel from one part of the North Shore to another for emergency purposes, to get food and supplies to someone who was disabled, for example. And they wouldn't know what route to do unless they just went out and did it by trial and error. And they were trying to prevent that to be more efficient and more effective. and not to create undue congestion on the roads. They wanted to know what was the best thing to do. But the person answering the phone at Auckland Council just knew nothing.
Yeah.
Knew nothing about the North Shore. They probably lived in South Auckland.
Or could have lived anywhere.
So that criticism, I feel, still stands because we haven't really got, as you say, it's all very loose and we don't really know what's happening and there isn't money. So I'm just wondering what do you think about the phoning situation?
Oh, it's hugely important to get the right information through and correct information. I guess I'll take that point back to Auckland Emergency Management because we are feeding back what we need from them.
Mm.
And that's very reasonable to do so. We could actually set up people who are informed in the area who could step into that role quite quickly.
Well, that is what is needed. Mm. And it's not so much a cost as having a structure that's appropriate.
Yeah, we've got to have a structure that really covers all those bases. I have a friend living in Piha, and certainly her phone and the Karikari phones were all on different providers, and that created issues as well. But I believe they now actually do have a generator, and there has been quite a bit of work done out there. We now need to make sure it goes elsewhere as well, for all Auckland.
Mm.
And it's very hard to locate where something might strike. I mean, it was very unexpected for perhaps the Wairau Milford area to be so flooded, Balmoral to be so flooded. You know, none of those things were really expected. So,
no, but there is now a strong pattern, a weather pattern,
yes,
that is repeated again and again.
Mm.
And we know that there's been talk from the weather forecasters that we are going to probably face these sorts of patterns.
Absolutely.
Again, repeating.
Mm.
So there won't be any excuse next time.
No, look, we're a country of, are we even 5 million? You know, we must be able to look after each other and form communities.
Indeed. And I'm really delighted that you have put your hat in the ring to be president of North Shore Grey Power. And so before we finish today, I want to make sure that people know that North Shore Grey Power is having an AGM, and it's in June. It's going to be on Friday the 24th of June at 1 p.m.
I think that's Friday the 26th, by the way. I just checked the calendar.
Oh, right.
Okay. That's fine.
Sorry.
1 p.m. at the Netball Centre.
At the Netball Centre on the North Shore. Yes.
And our current president will be speaking about the advocacy that Grey Power undertakes.
Yes, and we also have a special arrangement with Grey Power Electricity, which is Pulse Electricity set up to support seniors to provide a basic electrical service, a power system that you're not totally fleeced for.
Yep.
So there is a special deal going. If you join Grey Power, you're able to get advantages in the way you're charged.
So really go online, if you all can, and Google Grey Power in your area and contact that branch.
Yes, because that will be available to anyone joining Grey Power in any part of the country.
It will be. Yeah, it's national across
that's
the country
right.
In that sense. Yeah.
So thank you very much for coming in, Trish, and we look forward to welcoming you again when you're president.
Oh, thank you.
And your contribution is huge in terms of what you're doing in the community. So thank you very much for your time.
That's a pleasure. Thank you, Anne-Marie.
And we'll be together again next week.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
Someone reached in and grabbed it. What the rock loves.